Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the University of Southern Maine's Strengthening Supervision Conference Call. During today's call, all lines will be in an open or interactive mode. If your phone does not have a self-mute function, we ask that you please mute your line by pressing star, then six. Pressing star six a second time will reopen your line. If anyone requires assistance during today's call, please press star, then zero on your touchtone phone. As a reminder, today's call is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Ms. Mary O'Brien. Ms. O'Brien?
Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. This is Mary O'Brien on behalf of the National Child Welfare Resource Center for Organizational Improvement. I want to welcome everyone to today's teleconference on strengthening supervision. The Resource Center is based at the University of Southern Maine, which is why the operator said that. But we're here from the Resource Center to welcome you to today's call. We sensed a lot of interest in this topic of supervision lately. Partly there's a sense, I think, that workforce issues, as pointed out by the GAO, are affecting states' ability to meet standards set in the Child and Family Services Review. And there's a sense in child welfare that supervisors are critical to moving an agency forward towards outcomes and towards new practice models. This call today is going to highlight the work of one of the quality improvement centers funded by the Federal Children's Bureau that has focused on clinical supervision. The Southern Regional Quality Improvement Center funded four sites to implement structured models of clinical casework supervision and did an evaluation of the work at these sites, and they've had some results that have come out of that. To tell us about this work, we have with us Crystal Collins-Camargo. We've asked her to give us an overview of the Quality Improvement Centers and the Southern Regional Quality Improvement Center and about clinical supervision methods that have been found to work and have a positive impact. So Crystal's on the line with us. Then we're going to highlight one of the four funded sites. Missouri had a pilot project under the Southern Regional Quality Improvement Center and also is making a systemic effort to improve supervision overall within their agency. Through some efforts that our resource center, the Resource Center for Organizational Improvement, is involved in. So we have with us today Paul Sundit from the University of Missouri, who's going to talk about what has been done under the pilot project in Missouri and the results of that. We also have Steve Priester from the National Resource Center for Organizational Improvement, and he will talk about the broader effort to develop and implement a strategic plan for supervision in Missouri. All this leads up to what actually happens at the supervisor level, so we are very pleased to have with us today Lissa Schwach, who is a supervisor in the Missouri Department of Social Services. She'll talk about how the project has impacted units, what's actually happened at her level, and the difference that that has made. So welcome to all today's speakers. Before we get started, we always like to get an idea of who's on the line and just hear some voices out there so we know that we're not speaking into the void. So we have quite a number of states registered for today's call. I just thought maybe I would ask some people out there to speak up and say hello so we know that you're out there. Are there some states that just would want to identify themselves?
Oregon.
Hi, Oregon.
Hi.
Hi.
Michigan Department of Human Services.
Great.
New York State.
Yeah.
Nevada.
Yeah.
Oklahoma.
Great.
Colorado.
Yeah.
Arkansas.
North
Alaska.
Dakota.
Oh, that's great.
Indiana.
Yep, welcome.
Nebraska Health and Human Services and the University of Nebraska.
Great.
Mississippi.
Great.
Illinois.
Okay. That's great. Thank you. I know there's other people out there who we haven't heard from, but that's great because it gives us a sense that there's people out there. We actually have over 30 states registered for today's call, so there may be quite a few of you out there, and thank you all for coming. I just want to ask, we often have regional office folks on the line. Are there any ACF regional office folks out there? Okay, yeah, I think not today because there may have been another call offered on this topic for them in the last several months. Okay, great. Well, welcome, everyone. What we try to do during these calls is keep the lines open and interactive. So we'll pause between speakers to take questions. So please note your questions and feel free to speak up if something really doesn't make sense or you can't hear or understand something. It is an interactive session, and we want it to be that way. On our website is where you will find handouts for today's call. We put together an agenda and contact information for people who will be speaking. And then there's two documents with information on the Southern Regional and Quality Improvement Center, and one on the curriculum they have developed in Missouri. So I'm sure we'll hear about those from our speakers today. The email that you got about this call, you know, directs you to the link where those handouts are, and you can also find them by going directly to our website, which is www.nrcoi.com under teleconferences. So, you know, as I say, I'm sure we'll hear about those handouts from the speakers today, too. So with that, I think that we'll get started. So I'm going to turn it over first to Crystal Collins-Camargo.
Thank you, Mary. This is Crystal Collins-Camargo, and I'm on the faculty at the University of Kentucky and have been for the past 6 years the director of one of the four originally funded quality improvement centers. Just to give you a little overview of the quality improvement centers very briefly for those of you that aren't familiar with that process, the Children's Bureau began 6 years ago funding quality improvement centers as a new addition to their array of ways of providing both training and technical assistance, like the National Resource Centers do that piece, but also to really redirect the way that they can do their research and discretionary granting, which is what the quality improvement centers are focused on. It's really a knowledge development process based on the idea that if another entity other than the federal government is funded to serve as the facilitator of the research and discretionary granting, there is more field-based selection of topics for the studies. There is improved access to technical assistance and monitoring of the programs, and facilitation of real information sharing, both within the projects but also on a broader scale. And it's really intended to have a more rigorous research design by using a multi-site approach, hoping that the findings would be more generalizable externally. It's a 5-year process generally, and projects are funded for a 3-year implementation of whatever the topic is. The Southern Regional Quality Improvement Center worked within a 10-state region, primarily the rural South, began in 2001 with a knowledge gaps analysis, and fairly quickly we came with these states to the conclusion that supervision within the Public Child Welfare Agency was an area in which much attention was needed. And as we did a literature review and looked at what the research already told us, it was clear that we really ought to test what the impact of a more structured clinical approach to the frontline supervisory process in the public agency would be on both practice and organizational outcomes, as well as on outcomes for clients as well. You know, what we found was that, you know, in a lot of states, the supervisory process had become overly focused on the administrative tasks and had moved away from spending most of the effort on building worker skill and intervening with families and promoting evidence-based practice, as well as supporting the frontline worker. And that along with that, that there really was an emphasis in some states that was really focused on oversight as opposed to coaching in that role. And so based on the work that we gathered, the information that we gathered during the work of that first year, we pulled together a number of promising practices that come together in terms of a clinical supervision model that we wanted to test. And it's in this very brief period of time, I can't go into a tremendous amount of detail on that, but information on the models that we used, as well as the curricula that were developed, the lessons that we learned, and some of the summary documents are all available from the Quality Improvement Center. We'd be happy to work with any state on that. Generally, we took, you know, clinical supervision practice that's been used more extensively in other fields and attempted to adapt it to the public child welfare environment. some of the things that were emphasized were using structured planned supervisory sessions with workers as opposed to most of the interaction between worker and supervisor being more in a triage mode, more of an emergency, you know, I have this crisis with this family, what should I do kind of approach. Another piece is really working with the worker to help them identify what are those important casework questions that need to be answered regarding the family. What might be an appropriate technique to use with the family to address the needs that they have, and how can we target the assessment and the case plan with the family on those needs. Self-reflective practice on the part of the worker, and also a lot of emphasis on really, I guess, transforming the organizational culture to be more focused on learning and a more outcomes-focused orientation to the work. So an RFP process was undertaken, and four states, as Mary mentioned, were funded within our 10-state region to conduct projects: Arkansas, Mississippi, Missouri, and Tennessee, and I was pleased to hear several of those states represented on the call today. Since the time that these projects were implemented, some other states have also taken some of this work and attempted to adapt it and use it in their own state, including Nevada and Northern California. And there are some others who are looking at it. But I'm going to focus on really the broad findings that that we had. I'll tell you just a little bit about the differences among the states so that you can put what Dr. Sundit and Lissa have to share with you into context. The projects really all implemented similar models of clinical supervision, although the Missouri project and all of them had their unique twist. And Paul will talk with you a little bit about Missouri's particular emphasis in terms of their clinical model. What differed the most, it sounds like maybe we could, some folks aren't on mute, and that might be helpful. Let's see, where was I? The thing that differed the most across sites was really not so much the supervision practice, but the method that was used to teach those clinical supervision skills and then to reinforce them out in the field. And it was that knowledge transfer piece that differed the most. Some of the projects focused on using mentoring out in the field with the supervisors to help the supervisors actually use the clinical techniques in their day-to-day work. Others focused more on developing a peer support model where the group of supervisors really provided that clinical, that consultation and support to each other. So they differed in that way. And the findings of the projects differed as well. Just to give you a very brief overview, one of the levels of outcomes we looked at was supervisor effectiveness and perceptions of organizational culture on the part of the workers and the supervisors. And two of our states had statistically significant differences in that arena related to the intervention group as opposed to the control group or comparison group. I didn't mention that we required a comparison design, so all of the states had to have a comparison group so that we could have a stronger research design. In terms of preventable worker turnover, and this is a particular outcome that we had a great deal of difficulty measuring, which I think impacted our findings, one of the four states had a statistically significant difference in actual turnover of workers, and another state was able to document increased intent to remain employed in the intervention group as opposed to the comparison group. We also measured changes in worker practice, and two of the states demonstrated statistically significant difference in the workers' self-efficacy in terms of child welfare tasks. And a third had an increase in self-efficacy outcomes, which really has to do with the extent to which workers feel like they have the ability or even the hope to impact change in their families that they're working with, and their ability to really have an effective intervention with families, which I think is critically important. We measured, we utilized whatever sort of case record or peer record review process was being used in the state. We employed those findings with our intervention comparison group, and one state put some emphasis in that and noticed some improved findings in that area in their intervention as opposed to the comparison. Finally, we looked at client outcomes. We did not anticipate that a supervisory intervention in over a three-year period would note a statistically significant difference on client-level outcomes like recurrence of maltreatment or something of that nature. But we did want to look to see whether or not there seemed to be any trends in that area, and we also felt like it was very important for everyone involved in the project to be reminded on a regular basis that it was really the client outcomes that we were trying to impact. And again, you'll notice a trend that in two of our projects we found favorable trends in the intervention group in some indicators longitudinally. Those are our more quantitative findings. We also qualitatively, in doing focus groups with supervisors in all four states, found, I think, really strong indicators of change in three of the four projects related to the implementation of particular clinical supervision skills, changes in the way the supervisors were interacting with the workers, perceptions of changes in worker practice, and some examples of that was a shift philosophically into a more strength and solution-focused approach to their work with families, more self-reflection, a more comprehensive assessment of families, more time being spent engaging families in developing case plans and in their own intervention, et cetera, and even a number of client-level differences in terms of fewer complaints received from clients, a more positive attitude toward the agency and perception of that the agency was having a positive impact, as well as a perceived difference in the amount of effort clients were putting into their case plans, et cetera. So those were some of our challenges, and I will tell you that if you look at our more detailed documents on this, you'll note that the states experienced a lot of challenges during the time of the implementation, which is common. Hiring freezes, changes in administrative policies that were driving supervisors in an opposite direction, changes in high-level administrators, and so a loss of commitment in the agency or a shifting of that. And so I think given that, the findings of this three-year study are very positive. In my last few minutes, I just wanted to share with you some of the lessons that we learned, factors or approaches to the implementation of this clinical supervision that seem to be most associated with successful implementation. One of those was taking the approach that this was not about supervisory training. It's really about practice change and really changing to a more clinical focus on the front line and to an attitude toward organizational improvement. And it really did require not just this intervention with the supervisors themselves, but more attention to the overall organizational culture and the other things that were going on in the agency and how they impacted supervisory practice. Another piece that was particularly was important was the supervisors driving the process and being able to focus the learning on what was most relevant to them and a real emphasis on the realities of their practice on a day-to-day basis, using real cases to hone the clinical skills, for example. A lot of emphasis on the learning reinforcement. You know, one of the things that we know is that classroom training does not have the impact on practice change that we hope, that we would have hoped that it would, and we know this. We all know this. It's a required in our activities, but you need something going on to help the supervisors actually use the clinical techniques in the field and to adapt them and to process the challenges they're experiencing. And it's very important to have that on-the-ground aspect of the program. Another piece was emphasis on the development of group identification and relationship amongst the supervisors. It was very powerful because many of our supervisors, particularly in the rural regions, experience a lot of isolation and don't necessarily have a trusting collegial relationship with the other supervisors, and that proved to be very important. Another aspect was using small group learning over time as opposed to the more traditional intensive stand-and-deliver training model over a week or 2 weeks or whatever, and then the supervisors, would be sent back to their offices to, use those skills. We had, short periods of training time over a longer period of time, so there really was this longer-term reinforcement of practice change. Another piece was using the current tools in the agency, policies that were there, administrative decisions, and really looking at those realities through a more clinical lens. And how can the supervisors use what's already in place to in a different way? Agency reports, outcome reports, or administrative utilization review data, that sort of thing. And finally, really involving the upper and particularly middle level management in the process in a very direct way so that they can both embrace what you're doing with supervisors, but also to transform the way that they're doing their work so that they can support a more clinical approach to supervision on the front line. That's not something that we necessarily recognized in the early stages. And it became necessary for us to obtain additional funding to do work with the middle managers, all of whom had been notified about the program and were on board, thought it was a good idea, the majority of them, but really were not involved at the level that was necessary to promote that overall organizational improvement. And I'm going to stop at that point and ask if there's any questions before we move on to learning more specifically about Missouri.
Great, thank you, Crystal. This is Mary. Yeah, please feel free if something that Crystal said you'd like to follow up on. We'll take some questions.
Crystal, this is Catherine Kahn from Oregon from the Child Welfare
Hi, Catherine.
Hi. Congratulations. What an accomplishment, and thank you for the work that you've done for all of us around the country. My question is about that piece that you just put in about, like, it's very clear that there needs to be an organizational culture that supports this, what you call clinical supervision or this practice coaching role of a child welfare supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
I would like you to say more about, where did you get the funding to work with upper and middle management? What kind of work did you do with them? Did it involve structural changes in terms of the span of control that supervisors had? Just what happened with those upper and middle managers so that you could get that organizational culture shift?
Okay. What we did was we were one year into the implementation when in our work with the projects we learned that in three of the four projects they were really running up against some challenges with the middle management. That wasn't the case in one project because they chose to include the regional managers in the learning labs with the supervisors at all times, and they were actually part of the learning and part of the processing. In the other states, that wasn't as regularly the case. So we went back to the Children's Bureau and asked for 1 year of supplemental funding, which they granted, so that we could do a much briefer intervention with the middle managers particularly. And what we did with the middle managers is we began with looking at what the challenges were to implementing a more clinical approach to supervision on frontline, what those organizational barriers were, and in whose locus of control was the ability to change those barriers, and to try to identify what's within the purview of this region to change, what's in the purview of the organization, and what might be beyond that control. And then worked some on learning relating to how to implement change over time, what we know about change over time, as well as learning more about what the supervisors were experiencing and more giving them a taste of what the supervisors were doing. And yes, some of the states, and particularly two of the states, and Paul will be able to talk hopefully more about this in when he gets to his piece, because they were very successful with this middle manager piece. But there was some emphasis on doing some action planning and some actual strategic work on how local or even agency policies could be changed, how the reporting structures might be changed, how the way staff meetings are used could be adapted. And so really looking in those very procedural ways about how that that work could be supported on the upper and middle levels.
Great. Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Okay. So, Mary, should we then turn to Paul?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Great.
Okay. This is Paul Sundet at the University of Missouri in Columbia. I was the principal investigator and project director for the Missouri component, and ours was entitled The Role Demonstration Clinical Model of Supervision. There were three things that were probably unique about it to begin with, and Crystal has already alluded to them. The first was that in this case, the money followed program rather than the other way around. We started out with a need and got some money to fit the need rather than starting out with, there's money available, can we find a reason to use it? We had had a long history of concern about supervision in this state, as most of the other states have had, and we had cut back on our training to almost nothing in the way of supervisor training. The worker needs assessments that we had done indicated that the workers felt, when they came into the agency, fairly positive about the base training that they had received. But what was really lacking was the role model, the mentoring, the modeling of behavior from the first-line supervisor. The COA analysis, and we were under a legislative mandate to obtain COA accreditation, that analysis pointed to the same thing, and then finally the SRQIC survey that Crystal referred to came up with identically the same information. So we had a very clear felt need in the area of supervision. The second thing, and Crystal alluded to this, is we started very clearly with a dual focus on supervisory competence and organizational change. And the two were absolutely interrelated with one another, and there had to be a commitment from on top to both of those elements before we would move forward. Changing the organization culture to refocus on a treatment orientation was an element that was a requirement from our perspective, and it was signed off on by top administration in the organization after some discussion. The frontline supervisors in the approach that we take model and support the workers' development of clinical competence. The supervisory units refocused on treatment, which they had not been. They had been much more focused upon surveillance and monitoring. And we had moved away from a professional model to much more of a technical technician kind of manual approach. Changing the organization, one of the very first things that we did in developing an attitude toward doing this was to institute clinical competency expectations into the performance evaluation of supervisors. That had not been a regular part of the expectations and the performance appraisals of supervisors. We also moved to systemic worker assessments, which we had not had. We moved to individual development plans, a much greater emphasis upon behaviorally change-focused case assessments, and then changing the internal and external expectations, intervention expectations, particularly the expectations the court had for the performance of the Children's Division staff. As Crystal mentioned, this was done with an intent to have a comparison, to the extent one could, a quasi-experimental design. So we had an intervention, we had intervention areas and contrast areas. Our intervention areas, we chose one large metropolitan area and eight rural judicial circuits. Missouri is organized not on a county basis of service delivery, but on the basis of judicial circuits. Our contrast, their non-equivalent control group, was a metropolitan area on the western side of the state and eight rural judicial circuits. The site comparisons were fairly good. They're not a pure experimental design, and obviously there's a number of variables that could not be accounted for. We could not use random assignment from our standpoint, because if we used random assignment of supervisors to this, we were going to prove that supervisors individually can change, but we weren't going to show anything about the organization itself. And we focused on total organizational units. One of the things we insisted on from the start in Missouri was that there was a project oversight policy board that was made up of all of the partners in this process. We had the director of the School of Social Work, four senior faculty members from the School of Social Work with child welfare backgrounds. We had two regional administrators from Children's Division, a couple of area administrators, the director of staff training and development for the state, the area training administrator for the area that we were using as our experimental sites, the research director, and the quality assurance director. And from the community, we had Prevent Child Abuse Missouri's executive director and Missouri Alliance for Children and Families director. Our participants, we had 36 in each of the groups, the experimental and the control groups. And they happened to just break out that way, 18 in the metropolitan area and 18 in the rural. These were specifically Child Protective Services supervisors. Adoption, contract monitoring personnel, et cetera, were not included. We had 36 at the beginning. When we wrapped up the training at the end of August of 2005, we still had 30 of the people involved in the training, although four of them were now in, had been promoted to superior positions, but insisted on retaining their status as trainees. One of the interesting things is looking at the group was that in the experimental group, when we began, 22 of the 36 had baccalaureate degrees and 14 had graduate degrees or were enrolled in graduate program. In August 2005, 27 of the 30 had attained a graduate degree or were currently enrolled in a graduate program. And since that time, two more have. So of the 30 supervisors, 29, I think, are either enrolled in a graduate program or have attained a graduate degree of some kind. The role demonstration model components are basic learning theory principles, successive approximation, that you move from observation to cooperative provision of services to observed provision to independent provision of services. The change in mentality and risk acceptance on the part of the supervisor is a critical part of this, and we had very, very cooperative supervisors, people that were really very professional in nature and wanted to learn and wanted to put themselves on the line for the most part. The project activities, we had a significant amount of didactic and experiential learning four times a year for in three-day sessions with homework assignments in between, as Crystal referred to from the developmental standpoint. We did do some practice consultation, but not as anywhere near as much as the supervisors out in the field wanted from us. There simply wasn't enough resources to do it. Individual professional development was a critical part of this, and we instituted a systemic evaluation using a 360-degree process in which the individual evaluates themselves, their subordinates evaluate them, their peers evaluate them, and their superiors evaluate them, and they receive this feedback, both structured and open-ended feedback on series of categories of performance. And we'll talk about the results of that in just a moment. We did some organizational advocacy as a necessary part of this and served as an extra systemic line of communication to deal with some problems that were out there, which was part of the organizational change process. And finally, there was some supplemental training that grew out of this. Crystal mentioned the managerial training. A second form of it was critical incident stress management training, which arose from the supervisors themselves pointing out that we had trauma taking place and nobody putting the staff back together. So we instituted training for specialized teams that have been utilized now 16 times across the state in trauma situations, both by the public agencies and also by the private agencies, by the way. The instructional activities came out to over 5,200 hours of content teaching, about 130 hours of direct face-to-face teaching with each individual, all of it at a graduate level, by the way. It is the equivalent of 9 graduate credit hours. And to date, 11 of the participants have or are receiving MSW academic credit for their participation from any one of four CSWE-accredited programs in Missouri. The content distribution was 21% of our content was on basic principles of supervision, 52% was on techniques of clinical supervision, and 27% was on clinical practice strategies and methodologies. The outline of the curriculum that Mary referred to before gives you a detailed breakdown of how this was carried out. So I won't go into it in any detail here. You can simply look at it. But the three basic areas of supervision basics, we simply had to go back to and lay the foundation in, and the teaching role of the supervisor. Clinical supervision, that was the very specific techniques around clinical case consultation, modeling clinical behaviors, assessing assessments and plans, and so on. And the clinical content emphasis grew out of our concern that as a state agency, we have a mission statement that says we are strength-based and family-focused. The only problem is that we don't have a strategy for implementation of that. And we had to try and find something that fit that ideology that a worker could learn and that a supervisor could model for them. So we returned to resiliency theory as a human behavior base and spent a significant amount of time on that. And the primary intervention strategy that we used to grow out of that was solution-focused brief therapy. Secondary strategies, of course, were focused upon, to a certain extent, crisis intervention, reality therapy, conflict resolution, and so on. The teaching cadre was a mix of personnel from the University of Missouri-Columbia, from the Department of Social Services and the Children's Division, and from external professionals, providers in the community that we brought in. We also used a significant number of agency administrators as facilitators, reaction panelists, and so on, because we wanted to develop a level of interaction between the supervisors and administrators with whom they rarely had any contact. The evaluation measures, Crystal mentioned that there is a detailed evaluation protocol. We used the 360 evaluation and the individual development plans that came out of that, the survey of organizational excellence. We actually tracked 24 child welfare outcomes. We used peer record reviews, consumer satisfaction surveys. We had the independent trainer ratings. We had the self-efficacy scales, the annual participant focus groups, and some data on employee turnover. Generally, what we achieved were positive results on all the measures. Some examples of the findings on the 360 evaluation, we used it only in the experimental sites. But on all five scales, from the first administration to the second administration, there was statistically significant growth, growth at a 0.006 level using a paired t-test. The responses were consistent with what has been found in other jurisdictions. We also pulled out the direct reports only scores, and those were much, much higher. The change there was very dramatic, and that is statistically significant at a 0.000 level. We also looked at the individual development plans that the workers or that the supervisors had come up with out of the feedback that they had gotten from the 360, and analyzed those in relationship to performance from year one to year two. Their primary goal was, most often cited goal, was to model practice for workers, which was rather nice since this was a role demonstration program. In five of the six of the most commonly established goals, there was statistically significant growth for the supervisors. There was one in which there was not, and that was control of emotions, which was interesting. We've got a lot of hypotheses about why that was, none of which we've been able to prove yet. The overall change in supervision, 67% of the supervisors in the project had improved their 360 scores from one year to the next. 12 remained the same, and 21% were less positive. And 72% of all the supervisors in the project improved their base on the individual development plan scores. The final, we did annual focus groups for formative evaluation and took a lot of input from that. But in the final round of evaluations, we asked a series of questions regarding the impact that this process had had. And that qualitative data is quite revealing in terms of role issues, greater role clarity and greater appreciation of the teaching role, far greater self-confidence and perception of themselves as professionals, and increased backbone is one of the things they said. belief in their competence and the skills and that their workers' respect for them, much higher levels of accountability for self and subordinates, higher demands being placed, greater teamwork, but serious concerns about the level of organizational support needed to carry out this kind of work and whether, in fact, the increase in supervision as a priority in clinical practice was, in fact, going to be promoted and whether there was going to be any reduction in administrative duties. We also looked at the evaluation of organizational climate. There was statistically significant growth in the experimental sites, in the workers' perception of their supervisors' effectiveness and positiveness. There was significant differences in empowerment, employee development, job satisfaction, time and stress, and burnout scales. They were not highly dramatic, but they were fairly positive. We pulled out five child welfare outcome measures to look at: timeliness of initial contact, timeliness of report completion, reoccurrence of abuse for family-centered cases, and length of care in family-centered cases. In all of those, save one, the experimental sites outperformed the control sites. The one in which there was not a significant change was timeliness of report completion. And in fact, in one of the experimental sites, one remained the same, and in the other experimental site, the timeliness of reports went down. We got together with the supervisors and said, "What's going on? You're making us look bad." And they said, "We're not taking the same stuff we used to take. We're sending it back. There's a lot more rewrites going on." So I don't know how you list that as positive or negative. One of the things that very rapidly here at the end that I want to say is that at the beginning of this program, we started planning for project sustainability on the first day this project was funded. Arrogantly, we assumed that we were going to be successful. And we, I think, have been. And now some of the systemic outcomes are that the clinical performance expectations that were initiated in the project sites are now incorporated statewide. There's a task force with representation from all regions established to examine the role and function of supervision, and Steve is going to talk about that and the excellent work that he and other members of the NRC have done in that regard. The project was identified by the agency for the governor as one of the two exemplary child welfare programs in the state. The basic 72-hour clinical training that we established has now been rolled out for all supervisors in the state. It's now a mandatory-based training. And we have begun peer-directed supportive training in addition to this to add on to what has gone on. Things we learned out of it, collaboration. You all know all the rules on collaboration, but this worked, I think, because every partner's needs were being met. The superordinate goal was fine, but there was also enlightened self-interest in this. The agency met some of the demands from the political environment for COA accreditation from the CFSR and the PIP. The supervisors got recognition, they got advancement, they got a credential out of this. The university personnel got publications, research subject access, practice contact, and in some cases some extra compensation. Second theme is innovation. The creativity of these supervisors was absolutely marvelous. When you put them together in a room and got out of their way, it was amazing the solutions that they came up with. And I can tell you war stories forever on some of the very creative sorts of things that they did. Coordination is another theme, and Steve is going to speak to this, because the relationship between the QIC initiative and the NRC functions, I think, is a classic example of coordination. And the last thing that I would mention is we haven't talked about money, but this thing was done on a shoestring. The economy of means here. It cost us less than $19 per contact hour, and most of our funds were spent on trainee travel and maintenance. That was by far the biggest component. When we were looking at sustainability of this, and we're rolling out the 300, the 360 evaluation now, it's going to go to 225 supervisors and 75 managers annually. When you look at the research on the relationship between morale, job satisfaction, and retention, I know that there's very major problems in calculating cost. But it was interesting that a top agency administrator, when we were discussing whether we could afford to do the 360, said the total cost of that is less than recruiting and training two new CPS workers in this state. And with the turnover rate we got, if we can reduce by two, we've already paid for it. So the cost-benefit analysis in this program is a critical element. I went on too long.
That's great, Paul. Thank you. That's a great overview of it, though. Thank you. Before we turn to Steve, maybe we should see if people have pressing questions for Paul. Wow, that is just it's actually just fantastic. It's a great overview. You know, maybe what we'll do, why don't we go into letting Steve talk about the things you mentioned he was going to talk about, Paul. That will give us a bigger picture of Missouri, and then we can see if people have questions then.
Okay. This is Steve Priester. I'm with the National Resource Center for Organizational Improvement, and this is the story of being at the right place at the right time. Around the time that Paul and his team were working with the pilots in Missouri around supervision, Missouri was just completing its on-site review and working on its PIP, and at the time, Linda Arnold, who is now with Data and Technology Resource Center, and the leadership in Child Welfare in Missouri asked us to come out and take a look at their final report and what they were thinking about doing in the PIP and give them some advice about technical assistance the different resource centers might be able to provide them. When we got there and looked at the issues, a lot of the issues that were needing to be addressed in the program improvement plan in the Child and Family Services review, many of those were issues that would come up ordinarily, typically in supervision. So we began asking questions about what supervision looked like in Missouri, and it was clear that some improvements clearly were needed. And we got to thinking, well, how can we capitalize on the pilot that's already going on and really try to support that by introducing systemic change that would sustain it? It's important to note that in the first round of Child and Family Services reviews, at least 22 states had a strategy in their program improvement plan for addressing supervision to improve supervision. Well, the state leadership liked that idea, and we said, well, here's what we propose you do. Give us a work group of your most respected supervisors in the state, including some of those who have are going through the pilot program with the University of Missouri at Columbia, and we will form a work group. We'll start out first as a focus group to really understand what supervision currently looks like, and then we will use this work group to develop and implement a strategic. Somebody needs to put their mute button on, please.
Yes.
We will use the work group then to develop and implement a strategic plan to improve supervision. So we've been at this now for going on 2 years. We're about halfway through implementation. The work group came up with a strategic plan that we presented to the leadership. And let me just say something about the process, because there was a business about engaging the leadership and the mid-management. We agreed that we would come out quarterly and work with the work group. In the meantime, there would be sub-work groups that we would work with by conference call. And that when we had our on-site visits, the on-site visit with the work group would always end meeting with the leadership of the agency and with the regional administrators, because we knew we had to have their buy-in if we were going to proceed. We ended up with a strategic plan that was broken up into four parts: supervisor training, supervisor support, supervision of child welfare casework practice, and then just sort of a catch-all. There are about 30 action steps that were developed in this strategic plan. As I said, we're about halfway through implementation. I just want to give you a flavor of some of those, because I think they really resonate with what Paul and Crystal have been talking about. Under supervisor training, the first thing that we did was we said we needed to change the sequence of training. Number one, training needs to be provided in Missouri before the change is introduced. Then we need to train the agency leadership, field leadership, and supervisors before the frontline workers are trained. And then train the supervisors and workers separately, with the supervisor training focused on how to help frontline workers introduce and sustain the change. We got the agency agreed to, as Paul said, to mandate mandatory supervision, clinical supervision training for all supervisors. We're now in the midst of developing advanced clinical training for supervisors, and as the Missouri SACLIS system comes online, develop the capacity to get data down to the unit and worker level, and then train the supervisors on how to use data to supervise to manage for results. Again, under supervisor training, beginning this year, we will begin having an annual supervisor conference. Under supervisor support, we regularized and set up expectations about supervision of frontline supervisors. First of all, we mandated how supervision will take place of workers, a decrease in hallway supervision, a weekly meeting with each supervisee, a weekly meeting of the unit. But we also said supervisors needed to be supervised. And so that's also been spelled out, expectations put out. We are now in another action step under supervisor support, and we're just beginning to work on that, is something similar to what Missouri did as part of the QUIC process, which is learning circles, where supervisors in an area will get together by themselves on a regular basis for peer-to-peer supervision consultation, to support continuous quality improvement. We're doing a time and activity study in Missouri to determine how supervisors spend their time. We did that in a pilot. It was very revealing. We're doing this to set up a baseline so we can begin to reduce non-supervisory tasks of supervisors so there's more time for supervision. We spelled out how to support supervisor educational advancement. The agency leadership was able to get a pay increase for supervisors in the state. So those were all the areas that we covered in supervisor support. In terms of casework practice, again, we mandated supervision of frontline workers and instituted a supervisor case review process. Then under the catch-all, there's just a bunch of different things we were working on or have completed. Consistent expectation and job descriptions for supervisors statewide. Consistent performance appraisal for supervisors statewide. A universal supervisor worker ratio. We're working on that as COA kicks in. That will be consistent across the state. Achieve consistency and corrective discipline action statewide. That's kind of in a nutshell what the strategic plan for improving supervision looks like in Missouri. To be frank, if you take out some esoteric things like, for example, supervisors were having a hard time accessing legal counsel, if you take those kind of esoteric things out, it really is kind of a blueprint, I think, to improving supervision really in any state or jurisdiction. I just want to stress that this was serendipitous. There are several things that happened simultaneously that really has made this stuff stick. One is the pilot that was going on and what they were trying to achieve and bringing some of the pilot people into the supervision work group. Secondly was recruiting and using the really well-respected supervisors so that when we put these ideas out, people said, well, you know, I trust that group of people. And then third and really important, and that was the consistent regular meetings with the agency leadership and the regional managers to ensure their buy-in and their support in implementation. We're not finished. We have a long way to go, but I will tell you practice is changing in Missouri significantly, and Alyssa Schwach is going to talk about that next. So I'm going to stop now.
Great. Thank you, Steve. Are there any questions before we move on to Lisa? Okay, let's hear about how this is playing out on the supervisor level. I'll turn it over to you, Lisa. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, everybody. As I'm listening, I'm once again feeling very honored to have been part of the pilot project that Dr. Sundit and Ms. Collins-Camargo put together, and as well as part of the work group that Mr. Priester is part of, and what an honor, and I'm honored to be part of this as well. And I want to talk, I'm going to talk a little bit about what I think, what I've seen in my own work group, and then also what I see in, you know, kind of throughout the agency in my specific area, because, hey, that's what I know better.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Dr. Sundit had mentioned a lot about, well, he'd mentioned the resiliency theory, solution-focused brief therapy, strength-based, family-focused practice. These were the significant themes that I thought were really emphasized in the project that I was involved in through the University of Missouri. In my work with my staff, I've noticed, and specifically in the more structured clinical case consultation, I think has made just an astronomical difference in my work with them and in so their work with their families. There's been a significant move to more formal conferences, case management, time management, as well as shift from triage instead of, there were times where I was sitting in my office and I had a line of three people waiting with their next crisis, to go over with me. That has cut down significantly, even though right now I have three workers that have been here for under 6 months. They have just, and these are, they're exceptional workers, but I think that part of this is because of what I'm able to help them become more independent. They become autonomous much more quickly. They feel empowered to work with their families. They feel like they have the answers. They just need to kind of bounce them off me so that we can kind of make sure that that's the right way to go. I have definitely been able to identify more clearly and more concisely staff needs and their strengths. And the opportunity to support them and praise them is really another one of the great things that has been very helpful through this whole process. Documentation is also one of the other things that has been made more clearly in a more formal case consultation as for our more challenging staff as well as for the staff who are doing fine. And, you know, them working together as a team has also increased. And I also wanted to specifically mention one of my more experienced workers who I've been supervising for about 4 years now. And we had a really hard time moving from a very punitive approach with our clients, with her clients, to strength-based practice and family-centered, and it has just made a huge difference. She has, I think we were able to figure out, close to 48% of her clients having custody of their children back within 3 to 6 months, where before it was like 2 years plus. And if not, we're also, this has also fit, been part of the shift toward in the agency, within the agency, toward accomplishing permanency and more quickly working with the courts to get that done as well. She is a coordinator here for the Safety Court program, which is a drug court program, and so she works primarily with drug-exposed infants and their families, and it has just been just night and day, the difference in the work that she has done with her families. And like I said, permanency and safety for kids has been very much emphasized, and she has just blossomed into a very strength-based worker. And in our conferences together, I am able to focus on that with her, and whereas, you know, kind of what everybody has been saying, the shift from administrative role to, hey, this is why we're here, this is what we're trying to do, and it's bearing out. So I couldn't be more pleased. I have all kinds of notes here that I think have already been covered, and I think the one element that comes through for all of this with me and my work with my staff is that you can tell it feels good when I'm able to praise them for the work that they're doing and model that for them, and I see from them how much they get from being able to do that with their families. They go to, when we would go to court in the past, it was a battle. And, you know, you had the clients pulling one direction, you had attorneys, you had DJOs, you have the commissioners and judges, and it's like everybody take a limb and pull. And now it's as though we are more unified. They present reports that are thorough and factual and state why they should follow our case plan, and they have a hard time arguing with that. And so things are getting done. And I think that's, in summary, probably the best ways that this has been just a great project, and again, very honored to be part of it.
That's great. Thank you so much, Melissa. That's so important, I think, to hear that is making such a big difference on the practice level, you know, with you and your workers and your families. So I think that we do have time for questions. So are there people out there who would like to raise any questions or discuss any of this in terms of what's happened in Missouri with these projects, how it might relate to what you're doing, questions you'd like to ask of these folks?
I do. Hi, this is Tamri. I'm a child welfare supervisor out of Oregon. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Can you hear Melissa?
Yeah. The person who just spoke, I'm curious to know what was your supervisor-to-worker ratio? And also, was there any duties taken off during this pilot time, taken off of your plate in order for you to do this level of clinical supervision?
No duties were taken off my plate during the project. And that didn't cause any problem. And the worker ratio right now, I have 1 to 5, and I think at the most it was 1 to 7, and the least it was 1 to 3.
Is that pretty standard for Missouri? I mean, what's maybe the average? Do you have any idea what the average of worker to supervisor ratio?
Yeah, what we're working toward is 1 to 7, and I think I know some units have 1 to 12. I know in the investigation units they were up to 9 and 10 and upwards of 12. I'm a supervisor for permanency workers, for family-centered cases as well as alternative care cases. And it's been tough to keep especially in the past.
On,
to
am
keep...
I eligible for assistance?
Oh, dear. Somebody needs to mute that line. Or Joe, can you do that for us? Thank you.
So it's been lower in my area, partially because of staff turnover and because of hiring freezes and
sure.
That kind of thing.
We're in the middle of those, too.
Yeah.
Lisa, let me just add something. Let me add something that you said before, that as each of the circuits goes through COA accreditation, that's when those circuits are getting to that 1-7 goal.
Yes.
Right. Right. The CAO creates sort of some external standards you're trying to meet.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Phil from Oregon. Question for Lisa. Much of the shift in practice was you teaching your folks in a group setting, new clinical skills, and how much was just you more one-on-one, your discussions with them?
We have monthly group staff meetings. And also do case consultations at that point in a group setting. And then weekly, I try to meet with them weekly for the one-on-one clinical case consultations.
Yeah, and listen, just to follow up on that, the training that you did that was done under this project, the 4 times a year, 3-day sessions.
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah.
That was the training you went through, and then after that you then worked with your started doing this work with your staff?
Yes, and actually during the whole process as well.
Right, right.
Hi, this is Christy from Alaska. I have a question that I'm not sure who might be best to answer, but I'm wondering for Missouri in terms of licensing requirements for your staff, the actual line case-carrying staff, if they're required to be social workers or if you have a mix of people with a variety of degrees in human services and what impact in relation to making a shift and how they approach their families and learning the clinical theories and models. Did you look at that data at all in terms of the success?
The state does not have any licensure requirements for people within children's division. In fact, there is an exemption in the state licensure law that specifically has public agency personnel exempt from licensure requirements. So that was the only way to get licensure through in the state of Missouri, unfortunately. What we saw in this process over a period of time was that as people became more acquainted with the complexity of clinical practice, their motivation for advanced education went up significantly. And so there's a fair amount of movement in that direction, and there's a good utilization of $40 to support part-time graduate education, and there's at least 4 graduate programs in the state that are offering part-time graduate education. Among the people that have left the agency are also some of the people that have attained the graduate education and have gone into private practice, so it's a two-edged sword in Missouri.
Hi, this is Dan with the Portland State University Child Welfare Partnership. I have 2 questions, and one would probably be for Lisa, and the other may be for Dr. Sundit. The first question is, how long has Missouri Department of Social Services been using the strength-based approach organizationally? That would be my first question.
As part of its ideology, a strength-based component has been in the mission statement for 10 years, 12 years, something of that nature. Unfortunately, from the standpoint of a strategy of intervention to achieve that, what we end up with frequently when you talk to people about it is, well, I'm an eclectic therapist. Which, in my jaundiced old opinion, it means I don't know what I'm doing. it's a good thing to draw on a variety of elements, but there really was no coherent specific strategy of intervention. It depended very much upon whatever a supervisor happened to know and bring to the table themselves. So that's why we moved to having a resiliency and solution-focused a package that supervisors could use.
Thanks. That's a great answer to that question. That gets at what I was wondering. And my second question for Alyssa is, it sounds like you really made a fantastic shift in practice. I just wonder, before you were involved in this project, to what extent were you having regular unit meetings and formal one-to-one consultation with workers, if at all?
I was on, but not as sporadically, and they weren't as structured. And actually, as far as the case consultations, it was sort of as very informal and sort of kind of in crisis mode. As things happened, then we, you know, were discussing them and trying to figure out how to go about them instead of being proactive and trying to, you know, develop a case plan and take that, see that to, you know, through to fruition.
Thank you.
This is Phil. Could you say more about what the structured supervision looks like or sounds like?
I'm sorry, was that directed to me?
Probably anybody could answer that in terms of what it looks like for them.
This is Crystal. Let me just say something broadly, and then perhaps Paul or Alyssa might want to add to it. The way that we defined it at the Quality Improvement Center for all of our projects, and I'm not going to read you a particular definition. I don't have it in front of me, although we do have one for structured clinical casework supervision. The idea was to try to implement a more intentional approach to how the time between worker and supervisor or supervisor and the team of workers was spent, and that time was emphasized on attention to families and how intervention would be used with families, assessing families, how workers think about what is happening with families, self-reflection, you know, all of those activities that are really driven toward both the supportive and coaching roles of the supervisor, as opposed to what we kind of think of in terms of triage supervision, which tends to be more of that crisis-driven, where the supervisor is more likely to tell the worker what to do as opposed to facilitating the process in which the worker comes to the best solution for what to do, and also as opposed to the administrative approach where supervisory time is spent on administrative tasks rather than intervention-related tasks. And Paul and Alyssa, you know, if you want to say anything about that, please jump
in. I
think
from the training standpoint, what we introduced was structured case conference modalities that start out with child safety, look at child well-being and family well-being and at permanency, and giving the supervisors a framework for helping workers think through where they were at in a case, rather than sort of on a catch-as-catch-can basis. Far more structured, far more regularized kind of process. And as Lisa said, the regularized, regularly scheduled case conferences, which we were not doing in Missouri. Anywhere. This was not Lisa not doing it. This was no supervisors were doing them. Everyone was a little reluctant at the beginning, thinking that it was going to take up significantly more time. Now they're finding that it does not take up more time, that it is, in fact, a time saver, as Lisa
Absolutely.
Said.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let me add something here. Lisa, you might want to jump in because you know much more about this than I do. This is Steve. But in addition to the regular weekly supervision, individual supervision, supervisors are now using the supervisory review tool on one case per worker per month.
Correct, yeah.
Can you talk some more about that, Lisa, and what the what the impact of that has been?
Well, the main impact of that is that cases are being reviewed, and it's actually one of the processes that has become so part of what I do that it's. And it's so, I'm surprised at how streamlined it's become. I get sent, my understanding is it's a random selection process, and I get sent the names of cases, one case, as Steve said, one case per worker to review each month, and then it's an automated review tool that I click on and enter the information, the case name and the worker name, and then there's a series of questions. Based about safety, well-being, permanency, and the like, and yeah, it's like I said, it's completely automated. It's one case per worker per month, and it has been very helpful to see trends within my specific group, and it also is it makes it very clear. Okay, this is an area I need to work on in my consultation with my workers. If you know, I notice on the last couple of reviews that there aren't they're not getting the kids seen by the doctor within 24 hours of them coming into protective custody or something like that, and that's something we can address. And those have just been able to very quickly make big changes as far as services and in all those areas. So that is one thing that came out of our work group, and one thing that has been implemented statewide. And is, as far as I know there's been difficulty with responses or with the amount of response, I think 76%, but considering it's been, I think, just about 6 months rolled out. So, that's something that came out of our work group that's been really a big help and very obvious in where to go to kind of guide clinical consultations.
One of the things that was part of that also is that instrument was very carefully reviewed and rewritten to focus on resiliency and solution focus.
Yeah.
So there were elements that were not in the original federal model by any means, which were incorporated in the Missouri state model.
Is it possible to get that?
Is that the person who asked the question?
Yes, it's Martin from Utah. Is it possible to get that Missouri revision of that tool?
Steve, do you know if...
Yes, Missouri has given permission for it to be distributed. I'm just trying to figure, Martin, the best way to get it to you.
That's great. Well, we can send it, Steve, we could send it to everyone who's registered for the call.
Some people may not want to get it.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. But Martin, are you registered? You're probably registered. What's your name?
Martin Roundy. I registered, came in late, but I'd like to get access to that if I could for
sure.
Use.
Can you either send it to everybody or put it on the website?
Yeah, I think that would be fine. Putting it on the website would work well. Yep, that's where we're putting our hand up, so I can do that for sure. It sounds like a really valuable thing. Because I wanted to ask as a follow-up, somebody asked about what happens during the clinical supervision. And Lisa, you talked about talking to people in a more structured way about child safety, well-being, and permanency. But you don't have a tool that guides that, do you?
We do. It's not because we wanted it to be more kind of
individualized.
It would be very difficult to review every case every week.
Right.
As far as getting anything completed.
Right.
So we do it based kind of, we do a service plan. It's based on their service plans and kind of where we're headed as far as that is concerned. And there's a very general tool.
So, things you want to cover, and then you look at the service plans for each case or whatever.
Yeah, and you review what you discussed last time, where things are with where the worker was going to focus on things to get done for that family that last time, where that is, and then we are in the service plan, what needs to be done, and then when the next meeting is, what we're going to talk about then, and
Right, and what you're saying is the supervisory review tool that you do once a month with the case, one case for each worker, helps you flag issues that you need to be paying attention to in your unit, and that you might then bring up in individual consultations.
Yeah.
We did provide the supervisors in the training with instruments, I think about three different ones for structuring case conferences, depending upon the nature of the kind of case conference and where they were at in the case process. With suggested questions, areas sort of for checkoff and concern. This was designed to assist them, particularly in preparing workers for appearing in court.
Just a quick question from Michigan, Dr. Sended or Alyssa. That case review tool, is that part of the SACWA system for Missouri?
I don't know whether it's in it.
I don't think so.
As yet or not, it was designed with the intent that it would be, but Missouri is very early in that process, and is having very significant teething problems.
We've got it approved for the investigations and assessment unit, and it's supposed to. Do you remember it's supposed to roll out for case management? Maybe later this fall. My understanding is that the case supervisory case review tool it will be part of it, but right now it's separate.
Fantastic! Thank you so much.
This is Crystal. I just thought I would add that some of the other projects also developed similar tools for use in the supervisory consultation, and I believe some samples of those are in the materials that I provided to Mary, and if they're not, my contact information is there, and just let me know. I'd be happy to share anything that we have.
Great. Were there other questions out there?
Could we get that website again?
The website for the Resource Center or Crystal's?
Where they're going to put the supervision guide and the handouts and notes from today.
Right. That's our resource for the website for the Resource Center for Organizational Improvement. It's www.nrcoi, National Resource Center for Organizational Improvement, NRCOI.
NRCOI?
Yeah, www.nrcoi.org.
Oh, .org. That's why it wasn't working.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
And could we get Crystal's?
Yes, ours is a little longer than that, unfortunately, in order to get through the university website down to what you need. www.uky.edu/social/work/trc/index-qic.html.
That was way too fast.
Wow. Okay.
Now, you know what? I see it here, Crystal, though. You know, on our website, there's a couple of Crystal's handouts, including this Southern Regional Quality Improvement Center findings. And at the very last page, I see you have that link there, Crystal.
Yes, so if you go to the other one, it'll be easy. You can link right to it. Plus, if you Google Southern Regional Quality Improvement Center, it pops right up.
Yeah. That either one of those. Look at the Southern Regional Quality Improvement Center handouts on our website, and you'll find the link in there, or Google it. It's probably the best way to do it. It's true. I think this is such a great, great overview of these really innovative projects, and this idea of the need to focus both on changing practice within your supervisory units, and then working on the organizational level to support that and work with management, and that's a really important dual focus there. I think somebody asked that question about the workload and whether you're able to have the time to do that, and Paul had mentioned in the results of the focus groups that's what some of the supervisors were concerned about, that too, and having the system level groups to working on the strategic plan, I think, helps to address, and really raise those kinds of issues.
Mary, can I raise one more thing real quickly?
Yes.
You talked about time. I want to just stress something that I mentioned briefly, and that's this time and activity study that we piloted with the work group. And Alyssa maybe can verify that. I know we're almost out of time, but when supervisors got to see how they were actually spending their time instead of what they thought they were spending their time on, it really was quite eye-opening and helped them learn how to structure their time more appropriately. So we are now going to roll this out to all the supervisors in the state to get a baseline to begin to determine what we can eliminate, but also to teach supervisors how to manage their time better.
Is that available as well?
It is available as well.
How would we get it?
The same way you're going to get the other one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. We can put it on our resource center website.
That would be wonderful. That's a great idea.
Let me just tell you what we're going to send you. We're going to send you the results. We're going to make available the results of the pilot test so you can see what the supervisors learned. But then we'll also put the actual instrument up, which is an Excel spreadsheet that populates by itself. Now, that instrument would have to be adjusted to each jurisdiction because, you know, we went through a process where we identified tasks that should be included on the time and activity study.
Right. Right. And I would just point out to folks, too, that the Resource Center for Organizational Improvement, you know, is available to do technical assistance, and Steve has been working, as you see, in Missouri with different states on supervision. So we, you know, feel free to follow up with us because we can provide you with some tools or ideas or technical assistance, you know, on specific aspects of strengthening supervision if that's something that you're interested in working on. Okay. Well, thank you very much. You know, we're actually at 4:00, so I'm going to call this to an end. Thank you very much to everyone for coming, and thank you very much to our presenters, Crystal Collins-Camargo and Paul Sundit and Steve Priester and Lissa Schwach. Thank you very much to all of you for presenting and being part of this conference today. We have audio files made of the call, so if it's something that you'd like, think somebody else might benefit from hearing, you can get those audio files from our website or from our resource center. We do encourage you to fill out an evaluation form for the teleconference, which is available on our website. You'll also get an email soon with the link. It's something that's on our website. You know, any feedback that you could give us would be great because we do look at that and use it to help us plan these teleconferences and make them useful for everyone. So thank you for that, and thank you for coming. We also list on our websites our upcoming teleconferences, and we hope to see you again in the future.
Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you, everyone.
Ladies and thank you for your participation in today's conference. This concludes the program, and you may now disconnect. Everyone have a lovely day.